So we obviously know that increasing HIV testing is important. It's important to reduce the time between infection and diagnosis, which has implications for onward transmission and getting people onto treatment and various other things, and a gateway to PrEP and other forms of prevention. Obviously, you've just completely invalidated this entire presentation by your new guidelines. But this is what they were. So this is what this paper is going to be using. So the previous guidelines were that sexually active GBM should be tested at least once a year, and those at higher risk, meaning those four categories there, should be tested at least twice and up to four times a year. And the PrEP guidelines say that PrEP users should be tested quarterly for HIV. So around Australia, we've done a lot of work around trying to increase HIV testing and HIV testing frequency. There's all these different things that have happened in various environments, including the introduction of HIV self-test kits for purchase online most recently. And these strategies haven't been implemented evenly across Australia. And of course, there's the impact of PrEP as well. So PrEP has been scaled up massively around Australia amongst gay and bisexual men, and HIV testing is required to obtain PrEP prescriptions. So one thing that this may cause is this situation where testing frequency in PrEP users who are required to get these four tests a year may mask the rates of HIV testing among non-PrEP users. And we did this in New South Wales using the access data where we stratified the PrEP users and the high-risk non-PrEP users. And basically what this is showing in the solid purple line there, the high-risk non-PrEP users who are having an average of about two tests per year per gay man, and this has stayed completely flat over the last 5 years, despite all the work that we've done to try to increase HIV testing. And all of the increase has really been in that orange line there, which is the men who are on PrEP. So it's important to stratify HIV testing data by PrEP use. So really, this presentation here is taking the kind of inspiration from that graph I've just shown and seeing what we could find from the gay community periodic surveys to see if there's similar patterns going on in a different data set. So I'm just looking at the paper has three main aims. I'm just looking at two because I don't have a lot of time. So I'm going to be looking at trends in HIV testing frequency among the non-HIV positive men defined as higher risk according to the previous stigma guidelines, stratifying by PrEP use. And then, cross-sectionally, looking with the latest round of data in each jurisdiction around Australia within these high-risk gay and bisexual men, trying to look for demographic and behavioural factors that differentiate three different groups. And this does get a bit wordy and confusing, so I apologise for that. Firstly, the non-PrEP users who report fewer than two tests in the previous year, so we could call those infrequent testers. The non-PrEP users reporting two or more tests in the previous year, so they could be the frequent testers, and then the PrEP users. So I'm sure most people here know about the GCPS. It's time, location, sampling at gay social venues, events, sex on premises venues and clinics, plus it's supplemented by online recruitment, which makes up about 20% of the sample each year. It's conducted annually or every 2 years in all states and territories except the Northern Territory, and the eligibility criteria are similar to most surveys of this type. In terms of this presentation, two important factors or variables of interest was the frequency of HIV testing. So this is how it's actually asked in the questionnaire. How many HIV tests have you had in the last 12 months? None, one, two, three to five, five plus. So we grouped together the two and more to create that category of two or more tests in the previous year. And high risk was defined as sexually active men reporting any of the following in the previous 6 months. So condom or sexual intercourse with casual partners, more than 10 sexual partners, group sex, and drug use for the purpose of sex. So turning now to the results, between 2013 and 18, there were nearly 44,000 respondents that were included in this analysis. These are all non-HIV positive men, with a mean of just over 7,000 responses per year. Most were born in Australia. Most of these non-positive men knew that they were HIV negative at the time of the survey, mostly gay identified, about two-thirds full-time employed, just over half university educated, and about 8% using PrEP in the last 6 months. But of course, PrEP has been the indicator that has changed the most over the preceding 6 years, going from less than 2% of the men back in 2013 to now 21% in 2018. It's even higher in 2019. So overall, 52% of gay and bisexual men were defined as higher risk under the previous stigma guidelines. And of the men having casual sex, it was three quarters or 75% of those men. So being defined in this quarterly category is not an uncommon experience for gay men, or at least the ones participating in this survey. So here are the trend results. So what this is doing here is the red is people who are reporting no tests in the previous year, the gold is one test, and the grey is two or more. And keep in mind that these are all people who are defined as higher risk. So these people, according to the guidelines, should be testing at least twice a year and up to four times a year. Excuse me. So back in 2013, we already had nearly half of these men who were reporting at least two tests a year, and that has grown sort of year on year to now nearly 70% in 2018. And the trends were significant from the overall six-year trend and also in the previous 3 years. We focused on that previous 3 years in the trend because that was where PrEP was really rolled out since 2016. So this is now going to go up in the corner, just so you can remember that graph. And now I'm doing the stratification of PrEP users and non-PrEP users. So in the high-risk PrEP users, you can see that testing at least twice a year is almost universal, particularly towards the end. And if you actually break this down further to look at the three to four tests or five or more tests, just about everybody is in the three or more category. So just about all PrEP users are getting quarterly testing. That may change when we move to more on-demand use of PrEP in the next couple of years. In the non-PrEP users, the pattern is quite different. So what we can see here is that it was 47% who were having, of these high-risk men, were having two or more tests a year in 2013. This increased to 60% a few years later. And in the last few years, this has actually decreased significantly at a high degree of significance to 55%. And sort of more worryingly, I suppose, is along the bottom there, where there's about a quarter to one-fifth of men still who are reporting no tests in the previous year, despite being in this high-risk category. So another way to look at this is just to take out those people, these high-risk men who are reporting two or more tests in a year, in the previous year, and then looking at the proportion of which are PrEP users and non-PrEP users. And so PrEP users now comprise over half of these higher-risk men who are having two or more tests a year. And if you look at the absolute number, since 2016, all of the increase in those having two or more tests per year was in PrEP users, and you can actually see that decrease in those who are not PrEP users. So now we move on to the part, the cross-sectional part, the multinomial logistic regression. So multinomial logistic regression just allows the comparison of three or more groups, in this case three groups, instead of the usual two that's done in normal logistic regression. So in this analysis, it's those three groups that I mentioned earlier. The infrequent testers, so the non-PrEP users reporting fewer than two tests in the previous year, are the reference group, and the other two groups are then compared to that reference group to get the statistics and odds ratios. So we used the most recent available data for each jurisdiction around the country. So that was 2018 for some of the jurisdictions and 2017 for some of the others. I'm not actually showing any of the odds ratios. It's all going to be available in the paper that's under review right now. But what I'm doing here is just showing the prevalences of each one of these kind of factors that went into the final multivariate model. And then the stars indicate the significance. So if it's a red star, it's highly significant. If it's a pink star, then it's marginal, so almost not quite reaching significance. So these are the demographic factors. And so what we can see here is this pattern will be, you'll become very familiar with this. This pattern is the same for just about every variable that's thrown into the model. So you'll have the PrEP users that have the highest proportion or the highest degree of whatever the variable is. You'll have the non-PrEP using infrequent testers with the lowest level of whatever the variable is. And then you have the non-PrEP using frequent testers sitting somewhere in the middle. So for this, we have gay identity. There was no significant differences here, but that pattern was still there. For university education, PrEP users were more likely to have a university education. They were also more likely to be full-time employed. Also more likely to live in a suburb with a high concentration of gay men. In this case, that was defined as over 10%. And then, unsurprisingly, the men who are not frequently testing are more likely to not know their own HIV status, so 21% as opposed to less than 2% in the other two groups. We also look at gay social engagement, which is your proportion of gay friends and then the amount of time you spend with those gay friends, and we see, again, the same pattern. So PrEP users are the most gay socially engaged, the non-frequent testers are the least, and then you have the other group that's in the middle, and both of those relationships were significant. And then in terms of the sexual behaviour, again, exactly the same pattern. So you have the PrEP users that are engaging in more of the behaviours, like greater numbers of sex partners, group sex, any condomless anal intercourse with casual partners, and any receptive condomless anal intercourse with casual partners with ejaculation, and more STI tests diagnosed in the last 12 months. So you can see there that the PrEP users have very, very high prevalences of all of these risk behaviours, and then it's quite a bit less for some of them in the non-PrEP using infrequent testers, and then the other group, again, are in the middle. So to summarise all this data, in the last 3 years, there has been no increase in HIV testing frequency amongst high-risk men who are not taking PrEP. And the increased testing frequency that you see overall, when I show that overall graph at the very beginning, masks this, what's actually going on. So this confirms the finding that we found using the access data in New South Wales and that first graph that I showed. So the PrEP users were the most gay-identified, more gay community-attached, educated in full-time employment. They were also more sexually active and reported more frequent risk behaviours. That's in inverted commas, because if you're on PrEP, it's no longer risky for HIV. And the higher-risk, non-PrEP-using men who had less than 2 tests per year were the least gay-identified, least gay community-connected, educated in full-time employment, and the least sexually active and reported less frequent risk behaviours. And that other group again, was somewhere in the middle. But although the infrequent testers did report less frequent and less prevalent risk behaviours, all of them were classified in this analysis as higher risk according to those previous testing guidelines. And half of these men reported no tests in the previous year. So I think that's quite a significant problem. And the risk behaviours and STIs were not uncommon. So they were lower than the PrEP users, and they were lower than the frequent testers, but they were not uncommon. So nearly half had condomless anal intercourse with casual partners, and nearly one-fifth had receptive condomless intercourse with ejaculation, and 9% were diagnosed with an STI in the last year. So just to end here on a few implications. So for surveillance, I think going back to what I said right at the beginning, it is important to stratify. Whenever we look at testing frequency data, I think from now on, we always need to stratify by PrEP use and by HIV risk. So that's what we're doing now in the New South Wales data reports, and I hope that we do that more frequently too. In the Gay Community Periodic Survey community reports that get produced after each round, we've actually now started to do this stratification as well, because we don't want this effect to be masked. We don't want to be patting ourselves on the back about a job well done when actually there's a significant need out there of people who are actually the ones that are still susceptible to HIV because they're not on PrEP, who may not be getting tested frequently enough. So for the response, some implications are that community education is still needed to create demand for more frequent testing amongst these non-PrEP-using higher-risk men. But along with the community education, we can't just leave this up to the gay men. We also need to continue to implement innovative HIV testing models to make testing more convenient and to reduce the barriers to testing. So it is critical that higher-risk non-PrEP users are accommodated within clinics. We do hear about these problems with clinical capacity, that PrEP users are taking up a lot of appointments in clinics. So one idea that I'm floating and hopefully we'll be researching over the next couple of years is potentially ways that we could take the PrEP users out of the clinics for some of their visits in the year. So maybe they could have 3 at-home HIV and STI visits and then have 1 where they turn up to the clinic, which then hopefully creates more space for the people who are not on PrEP to have conversations with their doctors. Because clearly, increased testing frequency provides opportunities to discuss PrEP initiation and other HIV risk reduction strategies. So we want to keep these people who are not on PrEP going to the clinic. So to end, I'd just like to thank all the participants of the GCPS, the community-based organisations that run all of our recruitment and coordinate all the recruitment, the investigator team, and of course our funders, the State and Territory Health Departments. Thank you.